Forget Dis.
The Dis from Disabilities. I'm Emily Rawlings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. We aim to change perceptions of people who are differently abled.
To do so, we interview those with unique challenges who have demonstrated that there is nothing dis about their abilities and provide valuable information on how to interact with and treat those around us.
We put new episodes out every couple of weeks. Check them out on our Patreon.
We're going to be talking to Dr. Hacky Reitman, who presented at the World Autism Conference here in Las Vegas back in late November, early December. He is an awesome dude. He's an orthopedic surgeon, right? And I guess back in the 70s, he did that by day and, like a dang superhero, went boxing at night. What did he say in the conference? That he fixed bones by day and broke them by night.
Oh, nice.
But there's so much more to Dr. Hacky than that. He started an organization called Different Brains. And what was so cool is that it instantly made me think, wow, this aligns so well with Forget Dis and our philosophy. So I ran up to Wim and was able to talk to him. He will be interviewing with us.
How many of us are going to be on here?
It's just you, me, and Emily.
Hello.
Just us three.
Hi, Emily. Just make sure everybody talks nice and loudly because I'm a little bit hard of hearing.
Me too.
We understand that.
Okay.
Hello and good afternoon where you're at, right?
Yes, it's good afternoon here in Fort Lauderdale.
Florida, huh?
Yeah.
How do you like it there?
I love it.
Florida's beautiful. You guys have good beaches. We would like to talk with you today just about everything that you presented on at the Autism Conference. I was wowed by your presentation and by your organization, Different Brains. How about we start with a little bit about yourself? Who are you?
I am Hacky Reitman. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, practiced for 30 years, and I've accidentally gotten into neurodiversity. My daughter, Rebecca, who's kind of my hero, who had 23 brain tumors and two major brain surgeries, after she graduated Georgia Tech with a discrete mathematics degree, I was so inspired, I made a movie called The Square Root of Two, starring Darla Stanfield from Scandal. And after I made the movie, Rebecca started interning to tutor autistic students at Cumberland Academy of Georgia. And it was there that the owner of the school met Rebecca for about 10 minutes and said, "Hey, Dr. Reitman, do you know your daughter also has Asperger's?" And me, being a brilliant MD, said, "What's that?" She said, "Well, it's on the spectrum of autism." So I said, "What's that?" So I held up release of the movie, and I figured I ought to find out what the movie was about. When I had my aha moment after a couple of years of research, I wrote the book Aspertools, The Practical Guide to Understanding and Embracing Asperger's, Autism, and Neurodiversity. It was a short step from there to realize that all our brains are different, so I founded differentbrains.org, which is a not-for-profit where we embrace all of neurodiversity, and that's my story.
All right. I hope we get to dive a little bit deeper into everything that you just told us. That is so awesome. So we met at the Autism Conference here in Las Vegas. I hope you enjoyed the weather. Yeah, I was really inspired because here in this podcast, we're called Forget Dis, you know, as in disability. We like to focus on people's strengths and realize that people are differently abled instead of disabled. I was really excited to hear about Different Brains and Aspertools and everything that you do. You're an orthopedic surgeon, and I thought this was really interesting too because you mentioned that by night you fix bones and then by day you break them.
You switch that around.
Oh, yes. Switch that around. Yeah, we hope you don't break bones when you're on your day job.
Well, once in a while you have to.
Yeah.
What happened was, in my first year of medical school, I was jealous of my friends I grew up with in Jersey City, where my folks had a gas station. Still all best friends. Two of them became All-American football players, and there I was stuck in a six-year medical program at Boston University. All I could do was make 10th man on the Boston University basketball team, and I was jealous. So one of my friends said, "Why don't you box? You know how to fight." And I went in the Golden Gloves up in Lowell, Massachusetts, and I was lucky enough to win the whole tournament, and I got offered a $100,000 pro signing bonus way back in 1971 when a dollar was a dollar. I turned that down because I would have had to quit medical school. I had a 17-year layoff. When my daughter was having her surgery on her brain tumors at the Mayo Clinic and she wasn't supposed to come out of it alive, I started making every kind of deal I could with God. And I said, well, let Rebecca do good and I'll go back to boxing and I'll fight professionally and I'll donate all my purses to children's charities. So she did great and I had 26 pro heavyweight fights. It gave me good access for quite a while because I was having my 10 seconds of fame and I, you know, Good Morning America and Roy Firestone and the New York Times. And I got to meet with the then president of the United States, George H. Bush, to discuss children's problems. And I had a good run from age 38 up to age 52, when my last 10-rounder was. That was the boxing end of the story. I try to tell people, like the kids at the Hacky Reitman Boys and Girls Club, you know, don't buy society's big lie that things are mutually exclusive. You want to be a doctor, you can also be whatever you want to be. What you guys know a lot about, music has been a great, great developer of brains for centuries and centuries, and it's not mutually exclusive from everything else that we do.
I like that.
And that's exactly what we do as music therapists. It is the merging of the obvious, I mean, like using music and just spreading it into areas of functioning that aren't necessarily musical. There's still a big misunderstanding about, you know, what music therapy is. And it's on a neurological level. It, like you said, it develops brains. It continues to reshape and really has an impact on neuroplasticity.
Absolutely. And there are plenty of studies now to show the successful rewiring of the brain through music therapy. And it goes to a lot of different areas and it's very, very helpful.
Yes.
And underused.
Certainly. But we're hoping to change that. It is a legitimate field, but as it becomes bigger and there's more research available to the public.
Now, may I ask how you got into music therapy?
So I started playing violin when I was 12. I loved it. I'm so happy that, you know, my parents urged me to get into music as a hobby even, and I really took to it. And then I played throughout high school, and then I thought, I want to do so much more with my life. And then I heard about music therapy at the tail end of high school when I was looking at colleges and trying to figure out what to do with my life and if I could possibly make music even more meaningful than it already was. So I'd heard about music therapy, and this was just the perfect marriage of helping others and getting into a medical field while still playing music. I knew right then and there that that was it. What about you, Emily?
It's really common desire to marry the musicianship that we have, and we want to be able to continue to play music and be a musician, than the desire to help people in society in some mm-hmm. way, more than just entertaining. Don't really want to teach music necessarily on yeah. the education level, but really wanting to get in there and help people on a visceral level. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me into music therapy.
And I was always interested, too, in the brain. So I really, really especially love that music therapy has a neurological basis as well and is grounded in neuroscience research. So, yes, my heart just sung.
Well, you know, I encourage all of our interns here at Different Brains that the idea is to do what you, the both of you just outlined, which is to try to find something you really love doing, figure out how to make a living at it, and help people while you're doing it. And that's the trifecta. And if you can do that, you really love your work, you're helping other people, and you're making a living, and that's the way to be.
Yes.
So what kind of internship program is there at Different Brains? Tell us about that.
All right. Well, what we do is we limit it to 18 years and above because we feel that we as a society have accidentally discriminated against adults because all the cute little kids turn into adults. They have to get jobs, they have to get education, they have to learn how to socialize. I can't tell you how many people out there are in this country, young people. You know, they may have graduated college, they may not even have graduated high school. They're smart, they have special abilities, and they're sitting at home playing video games, doing nothing. And the parents don't know what to do. Part of the problem is because our system does not expose you to different stuff that you might like doing. And over here at Different Brains, our terrific neurodiverse interns get exposed to shooting a camera, video editing, audio editing, being in front of a camera, writing articles, editing articles, transcribing, researching, a whole host of things. Then they go on and they get jobs and stuff. So it's also a matter of socialization. Socialization is the most underrated aspect of all of our different brains. Recognizing that being alone is not good for your health in any way, shape, or form. Over in England, they appointed a minister of loneliness over there because it's a big problem, especially in the older age population. You know, people end up without families. They're living alone. They don't socialize. And at the other end of the spectrum, there are many people who just find it very difficult to socialize, to have a strong social relationship, to have a significant other, to have friends you hang out with and talk to. There's a lot of people who are just sitting alone with their computer. Study after study shows it's not just your brain that suffers. It's increased incidence of cancer, heart disease, you name it. And it's all based on that. So music is another great tool to get people together and to get them moving. And study after study also shows how exercise rewires your brain also. So it all goes together.
Yeah, that's something that I've noticed is the lack of therapeutic treatment that's available to target those social skills.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about people on the spectrum, when that's one of the primary areas of challenge is that socialization. And so I love that aspect of working in music therapy in that, because music can be so social mm-hmm. and so community oriented.
Exactly. It connects you to a person in a different way.
Absolutely. And music, almost by definition, is a welcoming, inclusive society and is a great leveling of the playing field, if you will.
Certainly, yes. It's something we can all engage in. You mentioned earlier about the accidental discrimination of adults in the system, and especially so, I think, for people that are differently abled in the special education system. It's as if as soon as, you know, they're 18, then it's like, all right, goodbye.
Yeah.
They're kind of thrown out and best of luck. The whole goals in that system are to get them up to typically functioning peers, right? And it's not, there's nothing to do with their particular interests or fostering different thinking.
No, you're right.
It's crucial that, you know, your organizations and others like it exist and those programs exist.
It's cool to see that there is a trend.
I'm seeing it too. It gives me hope.
There's more to job opportunities than what we have previously thought as a society for people with different abilities. It's not just the set skills that they have, but they have diverse interests that can be translated to employable skills.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a panel with Jose Velasco, who's one of the global leaders for SAP, the world's largest software company. And they have a big program employing autistic individuals. And he said, Hacky, this is not a social welfare thing. This is a business transformation. This improves our bottom line. This is good for business in many ways. And when you harness the special abilities of these individuals, so you have to give them a few accommodations. We all need to help each other. But there's all different levels. It's not just computers. I interviewed Thomas DeAri, who founded the Rising Tide Car Wash, which employs exclusively autistic individuals who love washing cars. And they have a good job. They get a paycheck. They get camaraderie. They get socialization. They do a great job when I bring my truck there. And they get paid. It's an entrepreneurial model for someone who wants to start one of those car washes. We have to remember that people like doing different things and people have different abilities. I was telling that same story with PowerPoint slides to an audience once at Florida Atlantic University, and we almost had a fist break out in the crowd. Why? We had a couple of hundred people there because one woman stood up and said, I think washing cars is beneath our children. My son is going to work for Microsoft. I showed a slide of my parents' gas station in Jersey City. I said, you know, my mother used to pump gas and my father was the mechanic and we'd done pretty good. And I said, It all depends what you like doing and what you're suited to. And by the way, when your son goes for his interview, when he applies to Microsoft, let's make sure he's prepped for that interview, even though Microsoft has a great program for people on the spectrum too out there. It's the interview process many times that throws people off too.
As Temple Grandin mentioned in her talk at the conference, you know, I couldn't interview, but it's like I just show my work. And I think that's also just a different way of thinking and of approaching things. I think neurodiversity will really like push our infrastructure forward and just push us forward as a society. And to say too that those jobs, you know, washing cars, pumping gas, are lesser than, say, a job at Microsoft isn't necessarily true either. I think all people in all positions are needed. So it really does lie in that person's interests and what kind of work they want to do, because then that work will be done good.
Yeah, and listen, when I interviewed Temple Grandin for Exploring Different Brains, she said, Hacky, I give commencement addresses at lots of engineering schools, and then I meet a lot of the graduates. She said, I'm going to tell you, I think about 70% of them are on the spectrum, you know, in engineering. But so what? I was just speaking to the CEO of a medical company that employs about 200 doctors today. And I was saying, what percentage of neurosurgeons do you think are on the spectrum? It all depends on how people's brains are wired. But thank goodness we all have neuroplasticity. We can all develop our wiring, so to speak. And now you can see it on PET scans and different technical, MRIs. You can see the actual changes. And you can see that very well with music therapy, too.
Yes, it's really good to have a reinforcement of a feedback model almost for people to realize, hey, there are changes being made. This is actually happening. And yeah, what a cool time to be alive. It really, really is. It's only going to get more advanced and better, I think.
Well, it is too, because the workplace is changing and what companies are looking for is changing. And it is more, as you pointed out, that Temple Grandin said, it's more based on your portfolio. What skills do you have? What can you do? And the workplace itself is changing to where open workplaces, remote work. If you have your cell phone and your laptop, you can go to a Starbucks and that's your office. There's all kinds of pop-up offices, open offices, where you rent space for a week or a month or a day as the millennials come in and travel all around. So it's all changing.
Yeah, quite a bit. And I noticed certain industries are kind of sticking to that. I noticed it a lot in tech. So a lot of tech jobs like Google are kind of leading the way in that kind of diverse workplace style, which is really cool. I mean,
yeah, my sister works in a corporation and there's no desks for you.
Yeah.
Like, it's first come, first serve. You come and you sit at wherever you are. So there's standing desks and there's sit down desks.
Right.
And,
you know, just grab different. One. It's kind of like the gym. Just grab your your equipment.
Yeah.
Get on with it. Yeah.
And a lot of people working remotely and from home, and some friends of mine and I, we have a company, and I'm involved in the very minor way, but build multifamily rental residential communities out in Colorado. Over the years, we've been building. It's very interesting the way designs have changed. It used to be you built a big apartment, and you also had a big, beautiful clubhouse, which was what sold the apartment, though nobody ever used the clubhouse. Now you fast forward 20 years. The apartments that people want are smaller and more efficient. The clubhouses are designed much like you just described the Google workplaces, and they're used all the time. The pool, the fitness center, but more importantly, you have like a Starbucks coffee, you have maybe a keg of beer, you've got couches, you've got Wi-Fi, and people are living in those areas more than they're in their small apartments. The workplaces are changing. It's kind of what I think of as the Uberization of the world. You know, it's just everything is kind of on the move and temporary and technology-based, really.
Yeah, I think
maybe
it's
society's way of countering the isolation that comes with the technology that we have. Being plugged into our phones, but providing opportunities where we can connect to human beings in that setting.
In a different way. Yeah, it definitely seems both are a result of this technological age that we are entering in, this paradigm shift that's happening fast. I think a little faster than we can keep up with, but we're trying.
What do you think is unique to Las Vegas as compared to other parts of the country?
Well, I think exactly what you just said. It's a very transitory city. So people come here for a reason. There are a lot of families here, though. I don't want to say that people don't like move here and start families. They do. But I feel like people come here and they don't live here for their entire lives. They come here and then they do what they wanted to do here and then they leave. It's a strange place.
It's different, changing with our sports team coming in.
It is. I think it's becoming less of what we just mentioned. Less movement, more settling with the sports teams. We're now a sports city and we weren't before. And it's kind of all suddenly happened within the past year or so with us getting our hockey team, us eventually getting the Raiders and everything. I don't think people anticipated it here, but I think now everyone's pretty happy about it. And obviously California is really attracted to it because we have a lot of people from California coming and moving here to kind of, I think, escape the high cost of living there. It's a rapidly changing city right now, and that's what I think makes it different. And it's a new city, relatively.
I was going to ask about the educational system out there and the educational institutions.
Unfortunately, the public education system is pretty low comparatively to other schools in the nation right now. But there are some grassroots organizations similar to what you are doing out there with Different Brains, where people are really recognizing, you know, this isn't working. This isn't
Something's not working the way things are
going. And we need to kind of change the way we do things. There's been a tremendous lack of resources for those with different abilities in this city. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are stepping up and trying to change that.
Yeah, on their own volition and their own resources. Mm-hmm. Because people just get tired of it eventually. And really, to speak to the public education system, we used to be last in the nation. But that's slowly getting better. People kind of were hopeful about marijuana revenues actually going to schools. And so that's, I think, getting worked out right now. I don't know what the status of that is or how that will actually turn out. Because that in itself is a very topsy-turvy thing. It's really all very interesting and, again, changing. But yeah, I think ultimately, like, what's happening here, people are just taking it into their own hands when it comes to education and special education. A lot of homeschooling, a lot of starting organizations.
It is. Homeschooling is really strong
here. Homeschooling is very popular here just because people are tired of the system.
Very interesting.
Charter schools, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of charter schools, a lot of vocational schools out here where people just come to learn a trade. They don't really mind having the high school diploma and they want to go a different route. So there are a lot of vocational schools out here as well.
Well, people forget also, you guys are the Wild West out there, the pioneer spirit.
Yeah, it's different. It's a very Wild West kind of place. Las Vegas.
I think it was a year or so ago that I just had to laugh because there was this giant thing of tumbleweed going down the street. Like, it's literally tumbleweed. It's the city.
Right. Yeah. No, we have them here. They exist not just in cartoons, but they're real. And dust devils, too. We get little dust devils in the park.
Society needs to understand and embrace neurodiversity for the benefit of all of us, for everybody.
Yeah, I think people would be on board if they understood that it benefited them as well. Being a parent of somebody on the spectrum, what's some advice you can give to parents with children on the spectrum?
What I do in our documentary, which, by the way, can be viewed free of charge on our website at differentbrains.org, and what we do also in the Asper Tools book, and what we do also in the Square Root of Two movie, really, which was more by accident, is we show how clueless this particular parent, me, has been, and what I've learned along the way. And what I would say is, there are certain tools you can use that are very, very helpful, okay? It starts with looking through the prism that the brain is different. Depending on how your child, if you're a parent, is different, let's say they're on the autism spectrum. If you've met one autistic individual, you've met one autistic individual because they're all going to be different. as my daughter taught me and is on the cover of the Asper Tools book, every brain is different. They're like snowflakes. No two are alike. But certain principles can make everybody's life easier. So when I wrote Asper Tools, as an example, Dr. Laurie Butts, who's the outgoing president of the Florida Psychological Association, you know, she said, well, Hacky, you're a moron because you think you're just writing a book about autism and Asperger's, but it really applies to all of us. You can make it so much easier on other people, especially if they're on the spectrum, with certain tools such as being specific. So much of what we do, we get used to being vague. So if I say to someone who's on the spectrum, who would very much appreciate it if I wouldn't say things like, well, I'll pick you up around 10 o'clock. No. Give me an exact time, an exact place. I'll pick you up at 10:15 at your house. And instead of saying, make sure you have everything if you're going to a doctor, say, please double check to make sure you have your insurance card and your ID. You can make everyone's lives easier. If you limit choices is another good tool to use. If you say, do you want to go out to eat? The answer is going to be no. If you say, look, we're going out to eat. Do you want to go to Applebee's or Fridays? It's easy for the individual to say, well, no sense me fighting. We are going out and I'd prefer Applebee's. Okay, that's easy. Simple things like a checklist to relieve anxiety. So many times someone on the spectrum will be just about to leave the house and they get anxiety. Did I bring my wallet? Do I have my keys? Do I have everything I need? And you can obviate that a bit with the simple checklist. Those are some of the tools. It's like every chapter in Asper Tools is something different. On our website, on differentbrains.org, all the resources there are free, and you can search our site for most anything on there. The advice I would have is the final chapter in my book is the greatest tool of all is unconditional love. That's the biggest single thing. Giving that love, you're recognizing that one trait many Aspies have is they are truth tellers. My daughter to this day, she'll say to me, if you don't want the brutal truth, don't ask the question, you know. Do I look fat in this shirt? Yes. And remembering that many of the senses can be hyper, sense of smell, of touch, of hearing. I didn't realize that about my daughter, that her hearing was very, very sensitive. And I didn't realize that everything is very specific. And I didn't realize that everything with her is black and white. She's so brilliant and so bright, but she has to be trained to know idiomatic expressions. And then when I made the Square Root of Two movie, not knowing that my daughter had Asperger's, not knowing these things, it was inspired by a true story. The good actor portraying me and Darby Stansfield, who was portraying Rebecca, they're in the diner, and Brett Rice, the actor, he's screaming at her, not realizing she's hypersensitive, not realizing everything is real specific and black and white. What is it with you? Everything is black and white. You know, in the real world, there's shades of gray. It's not like mathematics. The daughter is sitting there, like, bracing herself for this storm. She just says, well, it should be like math. Math is very appealing. There's exact numbers. You know exactly what you're getting. There's no vagueness of language or anything. It's a number, and it's doable, and it's specific. So those are just some of the things I think about in a stream of consciousness when I think about all of our different brains. I think about how can the person I'm speaking with, how can I help them to help me? How can I communicate with them better? What is their brain working like? Let me tell you something. Every good salesperson does that. They tune in on the individual's brain. If you ask a good salesperson, like someone who sells sunglasses, they'll say when a couple comes in, I can tell right away if the wife's going to be making the decision or the guy. And I have to look at them to really make that determination. And so I'll know what to say if I want to get them to buy a pair of sunglasses.
Thank you for the specific advice and tools that I think will certainly help as a therapist, even, because I have no idea what it's like to be a parent or a parent of somebody on the spectrum. But as a therapist, even, I've had to really watch my language and reconfigure my language depending on the individual that I'm seeing in that exact way, to being very specific, making sure there are clear choices, and then not using idioms or metaphors very often. And if I do, then explaining them. So just really communicating very black and white, very blunt, very, this is how it is.
Well, you see, the real heroes are the people like you who are in the front lines. You're teaching, you're giving therapy, you're using your skills to make somebody's life better. Sometimes I think of myself more as a journalist in a way. I'm kind of learning what all the people like you who are in the front lines are doing and how all the dots connect, because nothing occurs in isolation. Someone who has autism or Asperger's, by definition, they're also going to have anxiety. They're also going to have occasional depression. They all need socialization. They all need exercise. They all need whatever it is. And you're making a tangible difference as a teacher and as a therapist on their entire lives based on what you do.
Thank you. That is something that drives us. We also appreciate people on the front lines. We appreciate those who put those resources together that help us see the bigger picture.
I think we all feed off of each other in this big, beautiful nexus that everyone in a child's life can be a hero in that way.
Very well said. And adults too.
Yes, yes. Everyone, all ages. Doesn't matter. So what is your daughter Rebecca up to now?
Well, my daughter Rebecca now, who has a discrete math degree from Georgia Tech, fell in love with psychology. So she's just graduating from Lynn University in May with her master's in applied psychology. She wants to do research. She may want to go for a PhD. She chose, against my wishes, to live at a place where she's very, very happy, where she gets her own apartment, she gets some coaching, she gets transportation for the disabled, because she doesn't drive, and it does not bother her that on the same campus there are group homes, there are people who are intellectually like a lot, not as high functioning, but she's very happy there. She goes to the university and, you know, getting her master's. Now she's also doing some research at the university also. She's 36 years old and growing and developing. Very inspirational.
Yeah. Yeah, she sounds like a remarkable person. She's really paving her own way.
I'm very partial.
It was wonderful talking with you today. Thank you again for interviewing with us. Again, I really appreciate what you're doing and what your organization does for spreading awareness on neurodiversity and helping people and being on the front lines. I think you guys are as well, mm-hmm. on the front lines and actively helping people with tangible results. Thank you.
Well, I thank you both very, very much. Keep up the great work you're doing. I look forward to speaking again out in Las Vegas, which seems to be kind of the center of the universe for an organization.
It is conference world. It is. That's what we do.
Hope you get down to South Florida, Fort Lauderdale one of these days.
Oh, I hope so.
If you do, we'll have you come by and inspire our interns here. And we'll. What you do is so important, and I just want to salute both of you. And you know, keep up the great work. And if there's anything we here at differentbrains.org can do to be of help to you, we're glad to do it.